The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Who is here that did not come to the first workshop last fall? Anybody?
Oh,
you didn't come. All right.
Wait, what is this?
You came to the workshop last fall?
I went to one.
Did you come to the one where I got accosted when I was wearing my cowboy outfit?
Not believe so.
Yeah. All right. What happened? Explain it to me.
You were, I believe in one fact scenario, you were driving a Mini Cooper and you had Cowboys paraphernalia on it, and two Redskins players accosted your vehicle. I don't remember.
I don't either. Anybody?
I'm probably all paid for it.
It's been a really rich one, the running back. So they accosted me and shook my Mini and scared me half to death and said really bad things about my family and Cowboys. So, that's what it says here. Did you read that part?
Yes.
All right. So there are three pertinent D.C. opinions, because as we now know from civil procedure and the Erie Doctrine, you'd apply the law of the state. Okay? D.C. is not a state, but these are still the law. So we have Staubach versus Talbot. And what does that say? Anybody? Mr. Santiago? Mr. Santiago, here's money because you had your name black.
Thank you.
It's the only one I see. Name placards are good, but only the person gets money. What happened?
Looks like in order for prevailing battery, it defined what a plaintiff has to do to prevail battery action. Must show that he was subject to intentional offensive touching, which he did not accept.
Okay. And then what happened on O'Connor versus Riggins? Anybody? Any volunteers? Oh, thank you, Ms. Carter.
Court looking at a situation in which a verbal dispute escalated to punches, bloodying Mr. O'Connor's nose. They held that a legally actionable battery did occur, despite Riggins' claim that he was drunk when he threw the punches. And a quote from O'Connor, drunkenness of the defendant does not change the fact that he committed a battery on the plaintiff.
All right. And what happened in Greenpeace versus Snyder? Yes, Mrs. Horton.
So the plaintiff was a 45-year-old man, and he was roughly pushed out of a train room. And the court from this case, I quote, our standard is an objective one. A touching is offensive for purposes of battery when a reasonable man would find it offensive under all the circumstances. Under the facts of this case, a reasonable person would find the touching offensive, even though the plaintiff's immediate prior behavior may have been officious and boorish.
All right. So we all know who we're talking about there, don't we? Don't we? Snyder? Never mind. Danny Snyder, the owner of the Redskins. There's a handout. All right. So what happened was I went to a lawyer and tried to bring suit. I wanted to sue for battery. The judge threw the case out without giving me a trial. And the judge gave three reasons. First, since one of the Redskins filed an affidavit that he and Clinton Portis had been drinking for several hours at a bar mitzvah, in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, I conclude they did not know what they were doing and did not have the capacity to intend any harm. Therefore, there was no intent. Accordingly, there was no battery. That's what the court ruled. But also said, the plaintiff had an opportunity to identify evidence about the drunkenness, but did not disclose any evidence in the time frame required by the pretrial order. Therefore, I deny his request to consider his proper evidence now. Since there is no evidence countering that provided by the defendant must prevail on the issue of his extreme drunkenness. And then the court said, based upon the facts alleged in the complaint, assuming those facts constitute the touching within the meaning of the law, no reasonable person could find that such a touching was offensive. Now, I have a very strong personal belief that the judge was prejudiced against me because he's a Redskin fan. I tried to get my attorneys to getting thrown out or recused, and they refused to do so. Can I appeal? What do you think? Yes?
Yes, because there's case law showing that drunkenness is not an excuse for that.
All right, so what? So I can appeal. That's a good start. But you're being specific, and that's good. In what specific way are you being specific? All right, what's the issue?
I was trying to show how the points that the judge gave, like, there's counterarguments.
Yeah, but what issue?
About if drunkenness is an excuse.
Yes, exactly. Is that an appealable issue? What do I mean by an appealable issue? This is all in your reading, kind of, but what I'm doing today is trying to bring that back together. This was brought.
Well, it says that they didn't identify the evidence about the documents in the time frame that was required.
It's a different issue.
Oh, well, I thought because he didn't identify it previously, he might not be able to.
What's the issue you're talking about?
Drunkenness as a defense.
No, no. What did you just say?
That they didn't show the evidence of the drunkenness and the time frame required.
Okay. What did the judge do?
He denied his request.
To what?
To proffer the evidence.
So the judge what?
Denied his request.
You can say it that way. You see, he excluded evidence. Defendant, okay? XX used to mean whiskey, but that has a different meaning. Oh, is there a booze? Okay. Is that an appealable issue? What do I mean by an appealable issue? Yes.
Well, isn't it an appealable issue as long as you, like, reserve it for...
All right, you have to preserve the issue, okay, normally. What does that mean?
That means you have to object or in some way, doesn't it, in some way in the record indicate that you have a problem with that?
Exception? Why is that?
Because otherwise you could just...
All right.
Actually, I guess I don't know.
Okay, because we have a writ of error appeal system. You could have a different kind of a system. You could say a wrong conclusion appeal system. The writ of error system says, okay, you can appeal, but normally you have to show a mistake made by the lower court. And it's not a mistake if you didn't bring it up. So if you brought it up and the judge ruled against you, then you preserve the error. If you didn't bring it up and the judge ruled against you, too bad. You can't sandbag the court. You can't say, oh, I'll let him do this or that or the other thing, and then I'll appeal if I lose. No, you have to raise the issue below. So, was the issue of drunkenness as a defense raised below? Yeah, I think so. You always... Okay. Now, is there any other part of having an issue be appealable? Yes?
It has to be a final judgment.
Normally, it has to be a final judgment because the courts of appeal don't want 14, 15 appeals from every case. Every time the judge issues a ruling, they don't want an appeal. For example, if one side moved to vacate or a trial date because the attorney's sister-in-law was having a wedding, and the court denied the motion, the Court of Appeals doesn't want to hear an appeal about that. There are a couple of exceptions to the requirement of a final judgment. One is if there's a mandamus action. You know what mandamus is? That's where you seek an order requiring a public officer to do something. And you can get a writ of mandamus against a governor, a warden at a prison, or against a judge. For example, if you have a trial before a judge and the judge is sitting as a fact finder, and 8 years go by and the judge hasn't rendered a decision, then the parties might bring a mandamus action to require the judge to issue a ruling. So there wouldn't be a final judgment, it would still be appealable. And the other is that there is an interlocutory appeal. And an interlocutory appeal happens when there is a very close issue that would materially advance final resolution of the case, and the trial judge certifies that issue to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals accepts the certification. So you might have that if you have a very close statute of limitations issue in a medical malpractice case, and the parties recognize that if they go to trial, it's going to cost them each $500,000 in expert witness fees and court support. So the parties would say, thanks, we're glad you ruled that way, or we're not glad you ruled that way, but can we get this resolved ahead of time before we have a final judgment and go to trial and the whole thing? Because doing so would materially advance the final resolution. If it's going to be sustained on statute of limitations, better we find out now than after we have spent $1 million trying the case. All right? So normally, you have to have something that's been preserved for appeal and a final judgment. Okay? So, on the drunkenness as a defense, is this an appealable issue?
Oh, well, from the record, it sounds like the judge said that they didn't bring up the evidence of drunkenness, but I thought...
Oh, that's another issue.
Oh, sorry.
What I'm saying is drunkenness... You want to deal with this one first? Let's deal with this one first.
Okay.
Has that been preserved for appeal?
Well, it didn't, like I was saying, it didn't sound like it, because it says the plaintiff has an opportunity to identify evidence about the drunkenness, but they did not.
All right. But they argued, admitted. Let us present this evidence, and the judge said no. So they preserved it. Is there a final judgment?
Yes.
Did you see that? Any questions on it? Shame on me. It's a little better for everybody soon. Yes?
What? Ah, that is better. So, the question is whether or not excluding Boo's evidence of the defendant is an appealable issue. And the answer is, was it raised below? Yeah, because they argued let it in and they wouldn't let it in. Is there a final judgment? Yeah, because the court threw the whole case out. Can't tell from what I said whether it was probably summary judgment. All right? So that is appealable. What's the standard of review? First, what is a standard of review? Anybody? Yes.
How much the appeals court can look at it de novo, they can relook at everything if it's a question of law, or if they have to show deference to the lower court if it's a question of fact.
Sorry.
These are all standards of review. So what's the standard? Procedurally, what happened on this issue? There was a pretrial order, and what wasn't mentioned? The drunkenness evidence. Some experts are going to talk about how drunk the Redskins were. What's the standard of review when a court excludes evidence in that fashion? What do you think? Is it going to be de novo? Yeah, I think it's probably going to be abuse of discretion, because the Court of Appeals doesn't want to get involved in the day-to-day running of the trial courts. And if the court has a good pretrial order and somebody blows it off, and the court says, okay, I'm going to enforce it, the Court of Appeals is going to say, fine. If the trial judge says, you know, I'm going to make an exception this time, which frequently happens when you are local counsel, I think, because the local rules seem to apply when you're not. That's not true, but it's a perception. Then the court's going to say, we're not going to get involved. If the trial court did something truly abusive and said, okay, because there was a sentence without a period, I'm going to throw out the whole case because I really want no typos in my briefs, then the Court of Appeals might say, well, that is an abuse of discretion. So I think the standard for this is abuse of discretion. Okay, how hard is it to overturn when it is an abuse of discretion standard? How hard do you think? Yeah.
Pretty hard.
Yeah. Or even harder than that. What would be harder than pretty hard? Even more than that, it's extremely hard. It's just hard. Now, there are different levels of discretion. When it's just the court's calendar, it's extreme discretion. If it's admitting a piece of evidence, there's discretion, but not quite so much. So it kind of varies. When would have been a good time to plan for this? What do you think? The day it happened? We'll leave that one for a while. All right, so we just have one other issue, right? What's the other issue? What's the other issue?
Is drunkenness a defense?
All right. Now, what kind of a question is that? It's a question of law. All right. That's good. Is it an appealable issue? Yeah, it's been preserved, and there's a final judgment. It's a question of law. So it is an appealable issue. What's the standard of review for a question of law?
De novo.
What does that mean in Latin or Spanish?
From the beginning or from the origin?
Of new, yeah. That's better, from the origin. I like that. I don't know if it's right, but it sure sounds good. So, it's de novo. How hard is it to overturn something when it's de novo? Is it extremely hard? Is it pretty hard? What do you think? Mr. Gufanti, you don't have your name placard. Is it hard or really hard? Or just pretty easy?
I think it can be kind of easier because you have to touch the
Yes, easy. No deference at all. So if you're the defendant, which one of these would, if you were the person that's appealing, which one of these would you rather have? You want de novo, right? Okay, when would you start planning for this? I will leave that for a while. All right. So are we done?
No.
How can you tell?
Still.
There's more blanks in the sheet. What's another issue? Yes.
The intent issue. I guess the trial judge applied the wrong standard or used the wrong legal definition for battery.
Okay. Was that preserved?
I believe so. It's in the judge's order.
Okay. And it's a final judgment, so we're covered on that. What's the standard going to be?
It'd be a de novo because it's a...
De novo. Oh, good. All right, is that going to be really, really hard? Extremely hard, or what?
Easy.
It's going to be easy. I mean, you still have to do it, but it's easy because all you have to do is, it's just like you do it the first time. When would you start planning the appeal on this? Well, we'll leave that for later. Okay, is there another issue here? Yes. That's right. And what would that be just like? Yeah, it's part of the same thing. So the same analysis would apply. Is there another issue that has been raised in the written part that's written down here? Yes.
May or may not be correct, but ineffective assistance of counsel? Because they did not...
Kind of. That's a big skip.
Okay.
And that, you get that much more in criminal things. But what's your underlying point?
Judicial bias.
Is that credible in this case? Or put it on the other foot. If this had happened to a Redskin fan in Dallas and a Dallas judge throws it out, would there be some concern? Is it possible that a judge would be prejudiced against somebody?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or prejudiced in favor of somebody. Same thing. So if the judge is married to opposing counsel who's representing their children, and the judge won't take himself off or herself off the case, would there be reason to think it was an unfair deal? Yeah. All right. Was this preserved? Is this an appealable issue? What do you think? Mr. Alban?
No, because you asked your attorneys to bring it up and they didn't bring it up.
All right. There's a final judgment, right? There's a final judgment. He ruled against me. So that part's okay. But the attorney didn't bring it up. So under the normal rules, it wouldn't be appealable. Is there any argument you could make that this is different than the normal rules?
I mean, if you bring up the judicial bias before the trial begins, I mean, if there wasn't a bias before, there's a bias now. I mean, if you're telling
us, we can see it. Well, that's going. If you try to kill the king, you need to succeed, right? So if you try to get the judge stricken, you better make sure you get him stricken. It's kind of a close question, because if it's something that disrupts the judicial process or corrupts it, then you've got an argument, you can bring it up later. The problem is I knew about it early on, because right off the bat I could tell he didn't like me. So it's probably something that needed to be raised beforehand, and so it would not be an appellate issue. If it were, or let's say it was raised and the judge denied it, what would the standard be? What would the standard of review be? Mr. Davila.
Abuse of discretion?
Yeah. But this is a much different kind of abuse of discretion than the scheduling stuff. Who is going to be deciding this issue if it is appealed? What kind of people, Mr. Davila?
Other judges.
Other judges. And what do they value? Their discretion. Okay. So, it's the kind of thing... They're all sensitive. They all want the system to work. They don't want unfair, biased judges, but they want to be able to decide. So it's possible. Is this going to be extremely hard, easy, or really easy? What do you think?
Extremely hard.
Yeah, I think it's extremely hard. All right, when do you plan this appeal, Mr. Davila?
Sorry?
When would you start planning this?
Probably.
That'd be a good idea, yes. All right. Now, that's all that I saw. On what's written down. But let's say that we have a trial. The judge doesn't throw it out at trial. We have a trial, and the judge sits as fact finder. And after he's had the trial, he issues an order saying, I find that there was drunkenness, and I also find that aside from the drunkenness, there would not have been the elements necessary for battery. Would that order, and then he issues a money judgment, so big money, or, no, zero is what I got, zero money, final judgment. Is that an appealable order? What do you think? Yeah, that's an appealable order. What's the standard of review going to be? On the finding that the elements weren't met. No. No. He's fact-finding. So what is it? It is... I hit him. Which one of these?
Clearly
erroneous. So how hard is that going to be to get turned over? How hard?
Less hard than abuse of discretion, but harder than...
Yes. So just hard. All right. Now, let's say instead of the judge trying it, it goes to trial with a jury. And the jury comes back with a finding of no liability. Is that an appealable order? Can I appeal from the jury verdict? What do you think?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Was it preserved? Yeah. Is there a final judgment? Yes. What's the standard of review?
Deference?
No. No substantial... evidence. So if the jury finds one way and there's any substantial evidence, then it's not going to get overturned. And that's because it's so hard to have an effective jury trial. Once you have one, there's going to be an awful lot of effort to get it overturned. You can do it, but it's really hard. So what's the standard?
Abuse of
Did you remember?
No substantial evidence.
Really hard. Okay.
Harder than extremely hard?
Yes. I mean, that is, it's really, really hard. Because if they put anything in that could have been believed to support it, then that's enough. Yes?
So for when you have a trial by judge or trial by jury with a final decision, is it automatically preserved because it
depends.
Got to trial?
Probably.
Okay.
On the ultimate stuff, yeah. So what does this tell you about practice? If you were a judge and somebody brought a bad case that you know you don't like, and it's not so bad that you can grant a motion to dismiss, and then the other side moves for summary judgment, can you get reversed on summary judgment? Where does that fit in on this? We'll be applying law to facts. Or a motion for judgment. What's the rest of the language? As a matter of law. Same standard, usually. What is it? It's going to be like this. The judge is applying law to facts. And it's a cold record. The Court of Appeals can read the affidavits or the evidence as well as the trial judge. And so it is reviewed on a de novo basis. Is a judge likely to be reversed if he grants summary judgment on a close case? What do you think? Kind of. All right. What if there is a trial and the judge sits as the finder of fact? Is he likely to be reversed? What do you think? Is he more likely? Yeah, because he can get overturned for clearly erroneous. But that's a lot harder for the appellant to win on than de novo. So if you were a judge with a close case that you really didn't want to have reversals on, what would you do? Somebody brought a motion for summary judgment that you thought was pretty darn good. Yes! Would you grant the motion?
Yes.
You might get reversed. What could you do to avoid getting reversed?
We'll go to trial on
that. And then rule for the people you plan to rule for. All right. You guys remember the Waco Branch Davidian problem? Anybody not remember that? The back row, you're not making any movements. All right, the Branch Davidians were a religious group that had a bunch of children, and there were some big issues going on, and they got in a fight with local law enforcement. The FBI went out and surrounded the place and then went in with tanks, and there was a big fire, and lots of children died. And the United States was sued based on a lot of allegations, a very hard-fought case, and was brought under the Federal Tort Claims Act. Under the Federal Tort Claims Act, there are no jury trials. The court can convene an advisory jury. Very rare. So we brought what was a pretty darn good motion for summary judgment. What did the judge do? Ms. Kokeli?
Denied.
He denied it. So we're going to go to trial. So, all right, we're going to go to trial. We're gearing up for trial. It was a very interesting trial, but I won't bore you with the details. And right before the trial, the judge said he was convening an advisory jury. And we didn't go berserk, but we were pretty excited. because it's a scary thing. It's saying, all right, I'm going to let a jury decide who killed these little children. Their parents or the government, which was using loudspeakers to send in the sounds of lambs being slaughtered. And they used that. I thought, a bad idea. So we were pretty concerned. All right. And then the judge, what does the judge do to tell the jury what it's supposed to do? You remember? Jury instructions. Yes. So the judge issued jury instructions. And when you read the jury instructions, you said, gee, the government couldn't have written better jury instructions if it had been given the opportunity. What did the jury then do, Ms. Kilkelly?
They ruled that, or they found that the government was not responsible.
No liability. All right. In retrospect, what did the judge do and why did he do it? What is an explanation? Because I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure.
Made it a jury so it would be less likely to be appealed.
It's almost impossible to appeal. All right. So this is the kind of thing that the judges can use to protect themselves. Now, the disadvantage of having a trial is it's an awful lot of time and resources for the court as well as everybody else. But if there is a trial, it's harder to overturn the conclusion. Now, does anybody here recall the Wewa case? Civil procedure? Nobody had that? Alien tort statute? All right. What? Well, did I hear a yes?
Wasn't something about people like on space, and you didn't know what jurisdiction it was because. It was like a
good, you're doing well. Come on.
They didn't have a domicile.
Where were they from? It was under the Alien Tort Statute. What were they?
Aliens.
All right. So they brought suit where? In what country?
The U.S.
In America. Why did they get to do that? Because of the Alien Tort Statute. Where was the suit brought? Where?
Federal court.
That's right. What circuit was the federal court in? Where are you from, Ms. Carney?
Jersey, Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, that doesn't work. Somebody here must be from there. The Big Apple. Where's the Big Apple?
New York.
So they brought. Oh, Mr. Gufani. What circuit is New York in? Okay. So we had these people from some third world country who were alleging that their rights had been violated because of some environmental hazard that went in, and they brought suit in New York. Why did they bring suit in New York, Mr. Gufani? All right, there was a corporate headquarters there or something like that, substantial business. Is that why they brought suit there? No. It was close enough. Why did they bring suit there?
The only thing I remember about New York was something about jury instructions and the award. They can't lower the award.
No, it's too New York specific. But with New Yorkers, it always is, isn't it? No, what happened was, this was a hard issue under the Alien Tort Statute. There had been a decision by a circuit court, I think 12 years earlier, that was very favorable. Mr. Gufanti, what circuit court was that?
Sure.
The Second Circuit. Why did they bring suit in New York? Yeah, they went to that forum knowing that eventually there was going to be an appeal. Either they were going to appeal if they lost, or the other side would appeal if they won. And what better place to have an appeal than a place where you've already got favorable precedent? I mean, why go somewhere else where you might lose? So that is a whole lot of what goes on in thinking about where to bring a case. So when do you start thinking about an appeal, Ms. Sackman?
As soon as you know what the judgment's going to be?
No. When? You, yes. Yeah, as soon as you get the client, before you file suit, you start thinking about this. And a whole lot of what goes on in appellate practice is this jurisprudence kind of planning or building. What is the client's interest? Now, in my case, against the Redskins, what's my long-term interest? I'm a lawyer, but even if I weren't a lawyer, what? Wrong. What? Either one. Money. Yeah. Do I care about the development of battery law in Washington, D.C.? Not much. Not much. If I get a lot of money from Clinton Portis, I'm a happy guy. What if I am the United States government? What are my long-term concerns? Yes.
The refinement of battery law in Washington, D.C.
No. The United States government does not care a bit which way battery law goes in Washington, D.C. I mean, to be honest, it really doesn't. But it's worried about the overall development of jurisprudence. And so every appeal brought by the government has to go through one person. Who is that one person?
The Solicitor General.
And if the Solicitor General does not approve, then there is no appeal. And the reason that is part of the system is to make sure the government is speaking in kind of a unified way to the courts. What if I was a giant corporation? What would my long-term interest be? No, it could be money, but development of a good business background. What if I was a major Minnesota do-gooder organization? What would my long-term interest be? Would I worry about losing one tax issue or one lawsuit? Maybe, maybe not. Yes. Yeah. So you want to keep the client base happy. So you could do things that further that. Sometimes, if you take an appeal, what can happen? Mr. Curran?
You win.
That's one of the things. What else can happen?
You lose.
So there's a kind of a balance going on in every case as to what's the good if I win and what's the harm if I lose. And what would color your analysis of that good and bad? The time and the money it would take to bring the appeal. What else?
Whether you could be lost.
Yeah, are you going to have a lot more of these lawsuits? Is this going to, if losing here means I'm going to lose forever? Did you talk about collateral estoppel in civil procedure? No, all right. There's also the percentage likelihood you're going to win or lose. There was a recent case involving Navajo sovereign immunity that the Supreme Court granted certiorari. The tribal council did the calculation and figured they were going to lose. What did they do, Mr. Curran?
They
the other side had appealed. So they couldn't drop the appeal. Ah, that would have been an easy solution. So what did they do? They dropped the case. They said, we renounce sovereign immunity for this case to keep it from going to the Supreme Court, where they might have gotten a bad decision that would have hurt them more than the likelihood that they would have won and helped them. So this is constantly a calculation in deciding whether to appeal. What's the benefit of winning? What's the chance of losing? What other course might you take? Oftentimes, settlement comes about because of the threat of an appeal that isn't likely to win, but if it does win, would have long-term consequences for the long-term player, be it the government, a public interest organization, or a corporation. Individual plaintiffs who've been injured usually don't have that kind of a long-term interest. So, what we have discussed is in every case you need to analyze whether it's an appealable issue, what the standard of review is, how hard it will be to get it overturned, and in almost every case you start planning as soon as you know about the case. You want to make sure you preserve the issues that you care about so you can appeal if you lose. And think about the long-term interest of the client in deciding whether to appeal or find some other path. Are there any questions? Then happy Valentine's Day.